Welcome to the Revolution Church Podcast.
Welcome to Revolution, folks. Morning. Time changed. Look, I got freaking Stone Roses hat. So that's pretty crazy. Yeah, it's Halloween. Boom, 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 boom. And I found this really cool, cheap used polo jacket. And now I'm British. So happy Halloween. Wake up, wake up, wake up. You there? Say hello. Good morning. Good morning. I'm in the corner right now, so the set's a little bit different today. Everybody sleep okay? I'm exhausted. As always, don't forget to follow us, right? It's follow and like. Don't forget to like and follow and set your warnings or whatever they're called, notifications. Thank goodness for Milo and watching YouTube videos so I know how to do them right now. Oh, well, actually I might be a little warm to have this zipped up, trying to look super cool for you guys. Of course I have socks. No shoes. Usually I take the kids over to their mom's house during the talk. And I did today too, but it was just, we were super late because we were all so sleepy this morning. Ooh. Anyhow, hope this hat doesn't give anybody a seizure or a stroke or anything because it's pretty crazy. It's Christmas, green and red. So yeah, well, let's, you know, guys, gals and folks, we've been going through Galatians. I mean, it is March and we're still in Galatians. So that's wild because usually we're done in like a month and a half with Galatians. And I feel that we probably have another good month because four is probably going to take us at least two Sundays. And I have a surprise today is that I'm not doing Galatians today. I'm doing another talk today. I was kind of inspired. I was inspired, not kind of inspired. I was totally inspired about last night. As often, the internets, and seeing how we charizos treat each other always inspires me to continue to do this peacemaking effort. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go and continue on that peacemaking theme. I do have a plan for Galatians 4. I actually worked on that as well, but this really just, I felt inspired. So when you're inspired, you got to kind of go with what you're inspired to do. Growing up, people would have said, the Holy Spirit woke me up last night. No, I just had a disagreement on Twitter. On Instagram, I mean, Twitter. Like, Twitter is like a desert for Revolution right now. It's like no one's there. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so our only Twitter account is Revolution, and it's like nobody cares. On because I don't know if we're not arguing enough or doing crazy things. Oh, all right. Thanks for subscribing. Whoop, whoop. Westy Pops, thanks for subscribing. And don't forget to like our things, and it helps. And one day, if we have a million, they'll give us a statue, a Revolution statue. My son showed me Mr. Beast got a statue. All right, well, let's get into this. I'm a bit amped up because caffeine, but I'm going to kind of share with you some of the stuff I wrote last night and get into this talk. So thanks for joining me this morning, and welcome to the Revolution Gathering if this is your first time. welcome here. We're a community that is hopefully diverse of everything, but diverse of the mind. We have different thoughts. We're not all on the same page, and that's okay because we've learned to try to disagree well, because that's what we're called to do, and I'm going to pump into that a little bit more today. So last night I wrote this. I'm discouraged by the broad strokes of judgment people use, myself included. Christians seem to be great at this. This brand of judgment, and I hope I'm wrong. I know there's exceptions to the rule, but I feel like Christians have always been like, when I was a kid, I used to hear that we were the only army that killed its wounded. And we use these broad strokes. Yeah. It's going gray right here is weird because it looks like I have like a really wild, like bad guy goatee, doesn't it? but I don't. There's hair there. It's just white as snow. Pure as God's grace. See, this is sin, and this is grace. But I am discouraged. Last night, I was very discouraged, you know. Luckily, I was doing laundry and wrestling with my kids, so that helped me not be as discouraged. But I am discouraged. I'm discouraged by the broad strokes that we use. And when I, like I said, when I was growing up, Christians were known as the only army that shot their wounded. And, you know, for me, I found community. Well, I started my own community, but I also found community within the emergent church, and the emergent church has since dissolved and everybody's kind of gone their separate ways. And some of us are, you know, stay in touch. But even like I felt like maybe the answer was progressives, you know, like the mainline denominations. But even I noticed like those folks using broad strokes. And so what I'm hoping we can be better at is better at how we work with each other, how we love each other, how we treat each other, and how we look at judgment. So I'm going to go today, and I figured I would try to go like give you kind of like an argument of why maybe we need to be aware of what we're putting out, be aware of what we're saying about each other, how we're treating each other. Even poking fun at each other, you know, like we should be aware of this because, there is no victory when two sides in a country or different people are arguing with each other. You know, there's really like if one group wins, that's not really victory. Victory comes when we come together and we figure out how to embrace each other and find unity and diversity. Which requires quite a bit of patience, it requires time, it requires tough conversations, it requires arguments that are going to go place, it requires loving your enemies and even befriending them and to the point where we're able to have tough conversations. Otherwise, if we're just pointing and judging all the time, you know, well, I should probably do the talk, so that's going to prove my point, but what I did was I tried to find something in the Old Testament and went to the New Testament and Jesus and Paul and James and kind of give us like a bit of overlook of what the Christianity, the religion of Christianity says about this. What I want to say is this isn't what I'm just, I'm not just seeing this from like lay folks who are just like, oh, I'm a Christian and I think that, you know, I'm seeing this from, you know, people who are theologians and pastors and things like that, and how we treat one another and if that really makes a difference. But you know, also what I've realized is like peace doesn't really sell, you know, calling for unity doesn't really get people that excited. It doesn't get that many clicks. And I wonder if it's just because people have given up hope. And what I hope is that we won't give up hope, and that we will have hope, and that we will continue to move forward. So when we say we're fighting the good fight, I would say it's not a good fight. Fighting, I don't feel like is great at this point because we're not changing hearts. So I'm going to start with Proverbs. We'll start at the beginning. Proverbs 6. And the wild thing about this verse is it's actually one that my dad pointed out to me earlier in my... I should have put a bookmark in there. I'm always like, oh, I don't need a bookmark. I'll just write the number down and then I'll just awkwardly flip through the Bible. But one of the things that my dad actually brought up to me and when he was in prison and we were having conversations and talking, because I had a lot of anger. I was very angry. I remember my dad once telling me, he goes, son, you know, if you leave a community, if you leave a church, if you leave a group, just go. Don't destroy them, you know. Wish them well and move on, you know. Say what you need to say. Say your piece and go forward. And, you know, me, I was like, how's anything going to change if we don't argue and fight and blah, blah, blah. And he was trying to show me an important lesson. He told me, like, when he left, he worked for Pat Robertson, and when he left the 700 Club, like, they erased all their program. My dad had a kid's show. My mom and dad had a kid's show on the 700 Club, like, in the 60s. And when they left, somebody came through with one of those magnets and deleted all the tapes, you know, and it was kind of like this bitter break for them. But my dad said, I'm not going to get bitter. You know, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to talk smack. I'm just going to move forward and do my own work. And I found that, you know, at the time, and still kind of an inspirational thing, even when I was laid off from a church that Revolution was working under, you know, I remember like 2 years later calling the head of the group and saying, hey, listen, you know, I want to apologize because now I have my own staff and I know how hard it is and I know what you're talking about and I know what you're going through. And I'm sorry, I was such a pain in the ass at times, you know, I have more empathy now for you. So Proverbs 14 says, pointing the fingers with a perverted mind and devastating evil, continually sowing discord on such a one, calamity will descend suddenly in a moment, damage beyond repair. And I think, like, sowing discord is another thing that this same verse came up when I was visiting my dad in prison. So weird. You know, I mean, that was like over 30 years ago. And I just remembered, he's like, don't sow discord, you know. And I remember one time there was this other pastor going after a pastor friend of mine. And he was posting all this stuff online and they were fighting and stuff. And he called and I just said, give me the phone. Just give me the phone. And I said, man, you guys are sowing discord. Like, this has got to stop. Like, because this guy was a biblical literalist. And so I know the Bible somewhat. And so I was able to say, like, you're sowing discord amongst the brethren, and this has got to stop. And being someone of grace, you're always kind of, it's funny because if I don't give someone grace, sometimes my friends will be like, well, you need to give them grace. And I'm like, just because I preach grace doesn't mean I don't get pissed off every now and then. But this idea of we continually sow discord, we poke. And when the idea of somehow sowing discord and destroying someone else is not grace. Like, grace is knowing that you could have the power to do that and you don't. That's grace. And that's hard. That's the hard part of religion, of Christianity. That's you know, everybody thinks like it's all this moralistic stuff or like telling people who they have to vote for, how you have to think and being under the church's control. And that's just not, that's not what you're supposed to. We'll talk about that in Galatians next week, is that that's not what the church is called to do. We're not called to control people and manage people, which often happens, unfortunately. We'll talk about that next week. But yeah, so it's the thing of, the tough part is loving others and living within community. I mean, that's all of what Galatians is about and what we've been going through. And so when you think, well, I've got to destroy this person, I've got to, you know, burn this person down, I've got to, you know, and you start to use words like that, it's like, and here's kind of this is kind of a contradiction statement. It's really funny because, like, this is what, what's his name? The philosopher, probably the most famous philosopher in the world, Nietzsche. Nietzsche said, when fighting monsters, beware of becoming a monster. Now, I'm not saying the others are monsters, but what I'm saying is we often return the favor. You know, we often, when we start to stoop to the other's level, and I feel like that's where the church has become, is it's just two groups of people, all different denominations. I know there's nuances and there's a lot of great folks out there, but a lot of folks are playing that same game that I saw the evangelicals do, like, oh, the sin, we gotta fight. So now we're just, it's like a fight. It's like a, like almost like a civil war happening within the church. And one other reason I think that this stuff is really important is because what's happening in our country, and we don't know who's gonna be president next, and it's we're so divided. This is things that we need to think about, because violence doesn't end violence. Anger doesn't usually lead to peace. You know, like, if we can be angry and still have somewhat of a cooperation with each other and communicate with each other and say, this is why I'm hurt, this is why you hurt me, this is, then maybe we can get somewhere. So we'll start with that. One of the things I learned in something called dialectic behavioral therapy, and dialectic is like when two opposites are the truth, and it's a very in-depth therapy. You take classes with a lot of people, and then you have a therapist on top of that. You go like at least once a week. It's pretty heavy stuff. Dialectic behavioral therapy, DBT. One of the things you learn in that is called radical acceptance. And I'm thinking it might be time for us as a whole to start practicing radical acceptance. And radical acceptance is not like this thing where you're like, I radically accept that I love cheeseburgers. You know, no, it's when things are tough. I remember I've always had a lot of tension around moving, because I moved my whole life, and because we were forced to move out of my house when I was a kid, because my parents lived in the parsonage, and when they lost everything, of course you have to leave the parsonage, and it really broke my spirit as like an 11-year-old child, not really understanding what that all meant. And so every time I moved, and I remember one of these moves, and I was still married at the time, and I had two small children, and I was just like, I am constantly nervous. I'm constantly upset. I'm constantly having panic attacks. And and what I had to do through therapy, and I had to radically accept, like, hey, this is it. This is what's happening. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. And it was hard to do. It's still hard to do, but radical acceptance kind of was like moving into a moment where my mind was like, okay, I'm going to prepare for this. I'm going to work through this. So that was part of it. So it might be time to think about radical acceptance and maybe radical tolerance, which is not always that easy to deal with. Accommodating differences, you know, even when, you know, we've talked a lot, we always talk a lot about tolerance to the conservative church, like, we need you to be more tolerant, we need you to do all this kind of thing. And I think one of the other things we've got to do is learn to accommodate differences. Maybe it's time for us to talk about not also legislating our convictions or our religious opinions, because that's also something that I think would be a great place for us to start to have these tough conversations. So that's an example, is that we find a way to start having these conversations, and maybe a good place to start is saying, like, hey, listen, you know, the government's for everybody. It's not just for Christians. It's not just for liberals. It's not just for conservatives. And I think those are the type of important conversations that we're going to have, because I think, you know, there was a time where I think people felt more free to practice different religions and different ways of life and different thinking. And that has changed. But it's tough. So I've been feel like I've been banging my head against the wall a lot with this kind of conversation about helping people, finding unity, trying to encourage folks to think differently, you know. And I always find that there's a lot of reasons why we don't want to do that, why we don't want to move forward, why we don't want to see peace. And there's ideas where I get it. Like if someone has directly hurt you and things like that, you know, you're probably not the person to deal with that situation. You know, it's like the police, if a policeman is involved somehow and personally in a case, you know, hey, you're not going to be on this case. You know, you're not going to be able to see clearly. So I understand that. So I'm not saying like, all right, you know, go love the person who's been beating you or the person who destroyed your life and go fix that right now and make peace. You know, that's don't confuse that with that, because I think often we jump to conclusions. So let's look at kind of what different writers in the Bible have to say. What different writers have to say in the Bible. And I think we should start with, I was going to start in James, but I think we should start with the Beatitudes in Matthew. And Matthew 5 is the Beatitudes. And I hear a lot of progressives and a lot of my friends who are into social justice, I love social justice, we talk about the Beatitudes. And then there's always things that we skip in the Beatitudes. You know, I'll look at the first one that I kind of like to read quickly over in the Beatitudes, just so you know that, you know, I'm as guilty as everyone else. The one on divorce, like I don't preach and talk about that a lot, where it says, it was also said, whoever divorces a wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So I wrote me next to that, because that's an issue that we all deal with a lot of times in the world. So we'll talk about that. We're not going to talk about that, but that's one of the ones that sometimes brings that. So I the reason I say this is because I'm going to click into something that I feel like we avoid often and way too much. And I want to just say, like, you know, reading over scripture quickly sometimes or not looking at it and taking it to pieces sometimes happens to all of us. But the Beatitude, it says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And I think often that we think of peacemakers as just like people who stop wars and things like that. And honestly, I think those are great people. Those were needed. We need John Humes. We need MLKs, you know, we need Jimmy Carters. We need more peacemakers in the government and in the world who help bring people together and see things. But to go on, what it says about concerning anger and things of this and how we deal with anger. And I think we have an anger problem in the church. I think we have an anger problem in Christianity. And I want to just look at that for a second in 5:21. You have heard that it was said for those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable of judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother and sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, will be liable to hell, of fire. Now, I don't believe in a literal hell, but I get it. Remember that your brothers and sisters has something against you. Leave your gift there before. It's like, don't worry about your sacrifice. If you're having discord, if you're not seeing each other, you know, leave that, brother and sister, and then come and offer after your gift after that. Be united. Leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, reconcile to your brother or sister. And so reconciliation is a big thing here, not causing division, finding reconciliation. And grace is tough because grace is like anarchy. It's a free gift. You know, it's given freely. And often it's one of these things where some people, that's just too much. That's too much grace. Like, they don't want to give grace. They don't want to love people. They don't, you know, they don't want to be a free gift. They want people to pay the price for what they've done. And I understand that. I get it, because that's my natural instinct, is my knee-jerk reaction. You know, it talks about coming to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court. You know, I mean, it really gets into this thing of like, come to make forgiveness, try to deal with these issues. And what happens is in this world where we have social media, we're often just casting judgment towards each other or making fun of the other, and really hurting people. I see there's a really intense conversation happening. That's why I'm a little distracted, and I'm glad that you guys are talking to each other and working things out. I just want to say I see that, and I'm glad you folks are having the conversation. So I'm just going to try to stay focused here. Back in Matthew 5:38, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give them your cloak as well. And if anyone wants to force you to go 1 mile, go also a second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. And what I think is really interesting is this. I remember Pete Rollins giving this talk about the church of the second mile. And like, oh, we're all going to go the second mile, so we'll always go the second mile, you know. And then Jesus shows up at this church, and they're like, hey, man, check it out. We're going the second mile. And of course, what does Jesus say? And he's like, well, okay, well, now you got to go a third mile, you know. The norm. Go beyond with the norm. Go beyond the usual. And I think that's why some of us embrace faith, is because, one, we feel like there's something missing. We feel the reality of God. We feel the reality of Christianity. We feel the beauty of grace, and we want to walk in it. But how do we give that to others? And how do we stay in that place where we're continuously showing grace to others? And we're willing to go the extra mile. So sometimes that extra mile is listening to others. Sometimes that extra mile is not scapegoating others. I mean, I scapegoat people at times. I do. I get angry. I get mad. I say things I regret. We all do it. But, you know, we don't even want to go 1 mile, much less, you know. And it was Roman soldiers who would make people carry the packs 1 mile. And so, you know, this message in Matthew is Jesus. He's talking to people who are in a occupied territory, saying, when your enemy makes you carry something a mile, go ahead and carry another mile for them. You know, this is how you deal with your enemies. And I guess my question is, are we going the extra mile to understand or to hear or to know what people are saying? One of the things I saw online was someone kind of making fun of like a conservative after the, like an anti-gay conservative, saying like, we can still disagree and be friends. And they're basically saying like, no, we can't, you know, not on this issue. And I've seen that a lot. I've seen a lot of that, like, with he's holding up a sign. And I've seen it for different things. Like, we can disagree and still be friends. Not if you support Israel, or not if you support Palestine, or not if you support genocide, or not if you don't recognize my humanity. And the thing is what we don't realize is that, as funny as those things may be, or as serious as those things may be, is what we don't realize is that if someone's giving you the opportunity and saying, I'm still going to be your friend, when they are like that thinking, you might be the person who actually changes them. It's not them saying we can still be friends. It's you saying, okay, well, all right, I'll call your bluff. We'll still be friends. You know, a lot of my work with LGBTQ folks with Soul Force, when we did Soul Force stuff, The most powerful people in the room weren't people like me, the straight ally who knew the Bible, you know, and was like, the verses say this. And I had all the verses ready to go and all the answers. But it was the LGBTQ folks themselves just being human beings and people seeing them eye to eye and seeing the humanity that exists that were making the powerful changes. It wasn't doctrine. It wasn't theology. It wasn't philosophy. It was recognizing one another's humanity. We've talked about how Dr. King, when they said, when we're doing practicing nonviolence and someone's hitting me, you know, what ways do I defend myself? And Dr. King said, you don't. You look them in the eye. You know, and this is stuff that, you know, it's so funny when we talk about whitewashing King, you know, but I feel like we do something else where we like wash King with things of like not being someone who radically loved his enemies. And then that was like one of his major things is, and now he wanted justice. There was justice was involved with that, but he knew that love was only the force capable of changing those folks to bring justice. And that was where the hard work began, you know? And so, and reading John Hume, who spent 30 years working on peace in Ireland and eventually brought the Good Friday Agreement to Northern Ireland and peace, and I love Ireland. You know, guys know I go to Northern Ireland a lot. And it's a beautiful city, and it's great people and all this stuff. And just to think about, like, it happened. Like, this guy was inspired by Dr. King, found the humanity within his enemies, was able to even empathize with some of them at times and understand where they're coming from and also see the fault and like a serious look at himself and his own cause and see what he was doing wrong and what his own cause was doing wrong. And they were able to find peace. And they were able to do that through a lot of hard work, but also compromise and things like that. And so I would say like this isn't for the faint of heart, but honestly, I feel like this is what every person who's like, I'm going to follow Jesus should be doing. You know, I watched a friend of mine the other day talking about revelation and sin and all this stuff. And I was just like brokenhearted because I was like, man, you know, I just see everybody pointing out each other's faults. I don't see anybody trying to say like, how can we fix this? Like, there's no like, how do we fix it? It's just, you know, how do we just make, like, we get it. Those people, there are people we don't like. We get it. Those people, we don't like those people. Those people, we're having a hard time with those people. But do we just continue this vicious cycle on and on and on? Or do we say, hey, we're the ones who are going to break this cycle? Like, if you really want a revival, to use a religious term, then maybe the revival is a revival of peace. It's a revival of community. It's a revival of saying, hey, we're going to disagree well. Hey, we're going to practice some tolerance. Hey, we're going to move forward and we're going to have a lot of tough conversations. And what that looks like. It goes on to say in Matthew 5:43 in the Beatitudes, you have heard that it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. So when people say, well, I can't be friends with them if, you know, asterisk on grace and things like that. I mean, this is why I had this little ring done where it says grace with an anarchy symbol on it, because it really does move outside of our comfort zone. It does move out of what we, even our own natural thinking and laws, to embrace the other. But like, well, I can't be friends with you if you believe this. Okay, well, one, if you're not going to be with them, then you're going to believe that and continue to believe that. Social media is probably not the place to have that conversation. Maybe an email. Maybe a phone conversation, maybe a cup of coffee, maybe dinner. Imagine that. We get ate together like Paul was asking everybody to do in Galatians. Shocker, you know. If I take my enemy to Red Robin's and I have bottomless fries, I can talk for hours. You have heard that it was said to hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. And I always look at that pray for those who persecute you is in a way of those, like when we're not able to really drill directly with those folks because there's still too much pain, there's still much too many triggers, there's still those things as like, you know, that the cop who's involved in the crime who needs to take the time, you know, you can't be a part of this case, you know, in movies that person always ends up becoming a part of that case. And maybe that's how we should work it in life in a way, but pray, like love from afar. My friend Zoe, they would always talk about that and loving from afar. And I think that that's, in a way, is what Christ is saying, is like, pray for them is that love from afar, like keep them in mind. Think about them. Maybe you can help others through sharing your story, and you can. I spent most of my life doing that. So you may be children of your Father. So when you love your enemy and you pray for those persons, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? And get ready for this, sweet burn. Don't even tax collectors do the same? So who wants to be like a tax collector? And then it goes on to say, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And I believe that translations into be complete as your heavenly Father is complete. And it's saying is when we're able to love those we disagree with, love our enemies, loving those who persecute us, even if it's from afar, that we are reaching some sort of completeness and we're finding completeness. And it might even be that the future and with that growth and with that acceptance and with that looking at things is that the completeness is bringing peace with people, bringing peace with other people. It's like, you know, it's always wild when you see these people who go and meet like someone in prison who murdered a family member. And you see like the video and they forgive them and you're just like, what is going on? But for them, it's they get tired of carrying that murder and that anger and that hate. And they realize like for them to be complete, they have to let it go. They don't. It's not just the process of like letting that person off. What it's saying is like, there's something inside me that needs to make peace with this as well. And so that's also part of peacemaking is growth on our own and finding a peace that passes all understanding, because this is stuff that's hard to understand. And I don't think it's impossible to understand. I just think we live in a world where, you know, capitalism is saying, hey, if you buy this, like if you get that Stone Roses hat, you're going to be happy forever and you won't need to worry about anything else. And so I bought it on a 4 payments thing and it didn't complete me. Oh my gosh, I'm not complete. But working towards completion is one, accepting that there's always going to be this kind of void within our hearts and this lack that what's within us that we can share with each other, that we share the same lack, which brings us together, I think. But also this idea of loving our enemies. And so if you're, you know, and that's a crazy thing is like, you know, because when Jesus is asked, well, who are my enemies? And then he talks about the product or who's my neighbor. And then he talks about the Good Samaritan and things like that and makes it clear that it's also enemies and things. We're put in a strange place as Christians. And we have failed at this horrifically. Like some Christians think that they have to put law, like they have to make laws and that they're somehow going to, legislate people to heaven. I heard somebody say yesterday, we're going to legislate you to heaven. And that's not how it works. And that's not how it should work. And to me, that in a lot of ways shows a real lack of faith in the concept of grace and love. And I think we've really, because capitalism has promised us this kind of instant gratification, we've just taken the easy way. Jung who said people judge because so often is because thinking is sometimes very difficult, because really thinking critically is really difficult. And that's what Jung said. So that's why we get in this instant kind of like, well, it feels really good if I tell these people to go screw themselves and tell them how horrible they are. And if I share a few verses, it's really going to shut them down. This feels good. And I've done it. You know, you get the little high, but usually I feel rotten later. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go back and delete that or try to make peace. And, you know, me and my ex-wife, we got in a fight a few weeks ago and it was really weird. And she apologized. And I was just like, oh, I'm so mad, you know. And then something hit me that was like, you got to let this go. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry too. I'm really sorry. And so, because we got to work together. And I think as the church has to work together, because it's shrinking, it's getting smaller. And, you know, I like have a whole issue with Calvinist doctrine, but I'd like to be able to sit down and argue well with my Calvinist brothers and sisters, you know, and see if they can convince me and then I can convince them and have these hard conversations. But that's where what the Beatitudes say. So when we talk about loving the homeless and loving and taking care of the widows and taking care of the poor, you know, it's also saying love your enemies. And that's a tall order for a lot of us. And we not a lot of us want to do that. So sorry if I'm sounding really repetitive. If you even jump over to Matthew 7 about judgment, it says, don't judge so that you may not be judged. For what judgment you make, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be measured you get. You know, I mean, it's this kind of, it's this idea is that, and we see it happen all the time, is when we're arguing with people with the intent for victory for one person rather than for both of us. We just, the judgment goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so, you know, because we're trying to win our side of the argument rather than coming to a conclusion or a compromise or an idea of what might make this idea work better. So there's that. So then I also, over in Romans, let's look at what Paul has to say. And I'm thinking we're going to do Romans soon, because Romans has got this very, like, it's like got Galatians built within it. You know, it's like the skeletal system of Galatians kind of lays in there, and there's all this other stuff around it. And it's also, you know, people struggle with Paul because of the book of Romans, is one of the reasons. I think it would be good for us to take a look at it. And there's a lot here in Romans. You know, one of the, and I've talked about this, I think recently, we talked a little bit about this, but I think last year. But Romans 12:2 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern what is the will of God, and what is good, and what is acceptable, and what is perfect, which is complete again. So, you know, for by grace is given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourself as more highly than you ought to think, but think with sober judgment. So here's that idea of looking within oneself again, not thinking too highly of oneself, not thinking that you have all the answers, and using sober judgment and seeing your own faults, you know, and recognizing, like, okay, because you really need to, we really need to practice humility when we come into these things, rather than like, oh, I'm just going to own this person, because you're not, that's not love, that's not grace, and that's not what the gospel is teaching us in a way of guiding us. Now, I think you can do this outside of Christianity as well. You don't have to be a Christian to live like this. I think these are ideas. You know, for John Hume, he was like, we got to take religion out of this conversation. You know, you had Protestants and Catholics at each other's throats and literally killing one another. And he goes, we're going to have to take religion out of this and look at government in a different way and take the religion out of the government. And I think that was a wise move. You know, and Paul continues to talk about how we're individually, we're part of one body, and you know, we have different calls according to the grace that's given us. So I can't expect everybody to, like, oh, I want to be a peacemaker, or I want to do this. You know, everybody's got different calls. But for me, this is what I feel called for this community, is that we bring hope to other folks. We bring grace to people, and we see radical change. I mean, I think reformation is only going to happen by us loving others, not by going to war, not by forcing people to believe, not by legislating convictions, but by having tough conversations. One of the things it says in Romans, for time, I'll just jump to Romans 12:14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. You know, but take thought for what is noble in sight of all. It is possible so far as it is depends on you. Live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourself. And then it goes on down to say in 20, no, if your enemy is hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. And then 21, it says, Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, that was MLK's message, you know. And I think 14, in Romans 14, it really covers another part of this, is people who are weak of faith or people have of low faith. Often legalism comes out of people who are afraid and who are scared of other people, who are scared of other ideas, who are scared of like, you know, that's why they, you know, we hear homophobia all the time. It's like they're scared of LGBTQ people, or they're heterosexist and they just think they're better. You know, we have to deal with that freaking, you know, elephant in the room, really. That's very sad and scary as well. But Paul, we have Jesus very clear, and then we here have the Apostle Paul, which a lot of progressives don't like because they think Paul's, I don't know, a judgmental bastard. And I guess sometimes he can be, but you've got to really know who is Paul, who isn't Paul, and let Paul be Paul. 14:1 says, "Welcome those who are weak in faith, but do not for the purpose of quarreling over an opinion. Some believe eating anything while the weak eat only vegetables. Those who eat must not despise those who abstain, and those who abstain must not pass judgment on those who eat." And this was a huge deal at the time. I mean, he's talking to Jewish Christians who are saying, "Well, I don't do this. I don't do these things. I don't think it's right. My whole life I was taught that this is wrong." And now he's got Gentile Christians coming and going, "I don't see this as wrong." And what he's saying is, don't despise each other over your different theologies. Don't despise your ideas of what you think is a glory to God or not glory to God. Don't tear each other apart over these things. You know, and it's harder when you feel like other people are being harmed. But as we see, as we've gone through Galatians, we see that other people were being harmed by this. And what does Paul do? He confronts Peter about it. He confronts folks and says, "Hey, this isn't the way. You know this isn't the way." He has a really tough conversation with someone who's even recognizes a greater leader than himself within the church, and has a tough conversation with him and says, "This has got to change." And we don't know how what the outcome necessarily was, but we know he tried to have that conversation, and that he's setting that example for us to have that similar types of conversations. So it's not saying that we don't have conflict or that we avoid conflict. It's just that we do conflict well. We do conflict respectfully. You know, if we don't have conflict, then we go straight to war. We write each other out, and war just begets more war and more war and more war. It's not something that brings a whole lot of peace in people's lives. And violence doesn't work either, but we also don't realize that a lot of times our tongues or our memes and things like that hold a bit of violence and a bit of sting in them. They're set to hurt and wound others, or to put others within their place with kind of a lack of compassion. You know, I mean, judgment without love and grace is just cruelty. And a lot of us face that in the church growing up. And so what do? Do we allow that to continue, or do we find a way to love people the way we wish we could have been loved? To love our neighbor as, you know, ourselves, but, you know, treat others as we would like to be treated. That's something to think about, right? For God has welcomed them who are you to pass judgment on servants of another? Some judge one day to be better than another, while others judge all days to be alike. Let all be fully convinced of their own minds. Those who observe the days observe it in honor of the Lord. Also those who eat in honor of the Lord, since they give thanks to God, while those who abstain in honor of the Lord and give thanks to God. So it's like these are things that you don't think are a big deal now, but at that time were huge deals for these people. So we don't really see that. And he's talking to Rome, a huge occupied territory, and Rome had tons of power, huge city. And it's funny because I'm that guy I'm the one who doesn't, just thinks every day is alike. I would not even know I wouldn't even know when Lent is if my friend Peter Rollins didn't do atheism for Lent. Or if I hadn't had my friends in New York who still post like Ash, I think it's Ash Wednesday, and they put the ash on their head. I think I did that once in New York, but that was really kind of the first time that was on my radar. I don't even like to do Christmas talks or Easter talks or things like that, you know? So please love me and I'll love you back. All you pastors preaching your Easter and Christmas sermons.
Why do you pass judgment? And this down on 14:10. Why do you pass judgment on your brothers and sisters? Or you, why do you despise your brother or sister? For we will all stand before God's judgment seat of God, for it is written. So like, can we trust, do we believe in God? I think that's often is like, do we believe God's going to do this? I often think that most Christians have an idea of God and they think, oh yeah, God's good, but I got to, you know, my real God is my favorite politicians, you know, and they seem to depend on them a little bit more. And then they start using biblical verses to support why, you know, and we don't realize that we live in this like capitalist society and we're all, you know, war and trauma and all these things are happening. And we all in some ways become these one or two, three issue voters. And it's really strange. It's a strange place to live, to be honest with you. All right. So I've gone over almost an hour. I've almost been an hour. So we're going to jump real quick over to the book of James, because I wanted to see what James says, because, you know, Martin Luther did not like the book of James. He called it the Epistle of Straw. And he thought it was worthless because he didn't think there was enough grace there. Interestingly enough, and I mean, I could continue to go like, these are like, I had to pick like what verses I was going to use. Like I was thinking about Corinthians 13, and I think it might be worth a mention. It's probably my most used verse in my life. And it's not just for weddings anymore. Matter of fact, I think it's kind of a high stake for married people. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love is patient. And that's the one it starts with, love is patient. And this is what I want to say is that this really requires patience on those of us who are trying to disagree well and have difficult conversations and really want to be a peacemaker. You know, that thing that was really interesting about Hume is that it took 30 years. It took like five different peace processes. It took a long time to see this happen. And so, you know, the first thing it says here is love is patient. And I can imagine someone like John Hume reading this and Dr. King having to read this one days when he just wanted to quit and give up and couldn't move another. I mean, the night before he was assassinated, he was like in bed and they called him to come preach and he just wanted to sleep. He was exhausted. But love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious, boastful, or arrogant, or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It does not rejoice in wrongdoings. So we see that there. It doesn't rejoice in wrongdoings. So it doesn't rejoice when Peter won't eat with Gentiles or when we do these things that separate us from each other. But rejoices in truth. It bears all things, believes all things, and hopes all things, and endures all things. You know, honestly, like this endures all things is a heavy message, like enduring all things. And I'll tell you right, I wrote this last night on the side of this verse last night. One, I wrote, change takes time. And then I brought up my black pen and wrote, I would like to give up on Christians. I would like to give up on Christianity. I feel that a lot at times. Grace is not my first thought that comes to my head. You know, and so that's the thing is like talking about this stuff, preaching this stuff, you know, is reminding myself also how to love others. But, you know, it's not, well, I do it, so you should do it. You know, I get it. I get the struggle. I get the anger. I get the hurt. I get the times I really want to lash out. And you'll probably see in my stories sometimes I'll lash out at somebody, you know. You know, you'll see. Sometimes it's a fine line between like arguing well and lashing out. You know, it's tough. It's a tough road to cross. But anyway, you know, that 1 Corinthians 13:4-7, I recommend like if you've got your Bible, highlight that, look at it, go over it and go, oh shit, you know, it doesn't insist its own way. And I think one of the things that I also found this with talk with the book I wrote on, read on John Hume and bringing the priest process to Ireland. As he says, one of the things we've had to do is not stay focused on the past. And that's so often as we focus on the hurt, we focus on all the horrible things that have happened. And he goes, we have to see a new Ireland, is what he kept saying, a new Ireland, a new future, something that's different. We have, in order for us to unify, we have to look for something new where we're together. Because if we stay in the past, if we stay angry, if we stay resentful, if we stay hurt, and we're keeping all these records of when we've been wronged, like it says not to in Corinthians 13, then we're not going to get anywhere. You know, you're going to continue to, those fights are going to continue to stir up. We're going to, so there has to come a time where we have a truce and we go, okay, we're not going to forget the past because we don't want to repeat it, but we're not going to live there either, because we want a place where people were atheists and Christians and Hindus and blacks and whites and Hispanics and Asians and, you know, Native Americans and all God's children, all the people are able to live in peace and practice their religions and practice their things. You know, I mean, even Southern Baptists, you know, like, hey, listen, if you're not trying to put a law on me, then maybe we could live in a community where we're all able to afford our food and love each other and have health insurance and jobs that pay, you know, pay enough for us to have pay our bills and things like that. You know, I mean, like the basic necessities of life, if we're not trying to legislate and fight over our convictions all the time. And that's not saying we don't have justice, because there has to be great justice for all people to be seen equally. Am I right? I mean, that's equality and unity is what we want. Instead, it sounds more like a fantasy in the United States, which is crazy. And I think capitalism continues to play in that part, because we don't want to be patient. We want the gratification. We want it now. You know, it's like, oh, you know, our children, it would be great for them, but man, we want it right now. And it's like, well, then you be it. Then embody that now. Embody love, embody that grace, embody that peace. But it does take time, and it is a daily thing, and it's one day at a time, much like the 12-step program. And you're going to have moments where you take five steps back, you know. It happens to me all the time. So what does James say? And I picked this part of James, because James talks about not showing partiality and things like that. And we did a talk about that last year as well. But I thought James 2:13 was very interesting. For judgment will be without mercy to anyone who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. You know, I mean, this is James. This is the person that Martin Luther, the great reformist, thought was garbage. You know, here he's saying, like, mercy triumphs over judgment. We're being called to love our enemies, love our neighbors. So basically, everybody's covered in that. To be patient and be kind, but also be wanting truth and justice. There's nothing wrong with that. Those are things that need to be part of our lives, and we need to be working towards. You know, we can love somebody and say, well, we love you, but you're being unjust to these people. You're creating unjust laws. We can speak truth to the power. You know, that's not what it is. This is not saying don't speak truth to power. It's not saying, like, I mean, being nonviolent, when I read about nonviolence, and it's just not a passive thing. You know, it's really tough to practice nonviolence because you're not just practicing of the fist, but you're practicing of your words and your mouth and how you think and what you work with people. And, you know, it requires a lot of patience, and it requires a lot of self-control. It also requires a constant looking at oneself and looking at your own motives and your own motivation. So Paul says, you know, I mean, James says, you know, mercy triumphs over judgment. And then he jumps right into that and says, what good is if I say to my brother and my sister, if you say you have faith but do not have, if a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, eat warm, eat well, fill your stomach, you know, and you do not supply their bodily needs, what is good in that? And I think what's interesting here is not supplying one another's bodily needs. Is that's kind of like the basics of what we should be doing, is making sure that people's bodily needs are, you know. I think when I think about what's happening within Israel and Palestine, is like, you know, there has to be tough, hard work to, you know, to end one, this horrible, horrific war and what feels like a genocide, but also both sides have to learn to recognize one another's humanity and see their right to exist. And exceed that and let them live well so the other can live well. If we did this with each other and we weren't focused on a lot of these things, we might see that politics become about helping those who are less fortunate than ourselves, that are poor and that are homeless and that are sick and are dying. Like, that might become more of a focus if we aren't focused on legislating convictions or Christianity or, you know, these strange things. That really could be something that we move into another level of focusing on making sure everyone is loved well and treated equally. So I know this sounds crazy. But if we want to move forward, we do need justice. It needs to be justice for all, and it needs to be willingness to say, show some grace and show some forgiveness and say there's been mistakes made in the past. And, you know, as much as we'd like to have those things right, made right, we also know that we have to move on from that, and we have to move forward in order to be a community of diversity, a community that finds unity through diversity, which doesn't even seem possible these days. Because usually I feel like the left think that they're the only diverse side, but what they don't realize is that these other people have diversity of thoughts. And so, like, how do we find peace with these folks? How do we find peace with our enemies? How do we have tough conversations? How do we get to the point where maybe there is friendship so we can argue well, so an argument doesn't end that? And doesn't stop the process of being patient and never giving up, never losing faith, of always being hopeful and enduring through every circumstance. So my challenge here is that if this is something you like, try practicing it. But it's also to people who feel like, well, I subscribe to Christianity and that's my faith. This is what we're called to. And we have different people who do different things. I mean, you look at Shane Claiborne and the work he does with the death penalty and with nonviolence in certain areas. And he doesn't, I mean, Shane have had our arguments. We've had our share of disagreements. I've known Shane for years. We've both been in this about the same amount of time. But also realizing that his part of the body, like, he's really great at speaking out on the death penalty and helping people realize the injustice that's happening there. He's also been really great in speaking out on war recently, and I've been really encouraged by seeing about some of the stuff he says. But we don't always see eye to eye, and that's okay. You know, we all are called to different things. And I think what he's called to is vital. And I think what I'm called to is bringing peace within Christianity and within humanity is also very important. And I think the work complements each other, even if we may not, like, hang out and have a drink all the time. So I want to encourage you to think differently and to question this. And if you have questions, if you feel like you need to push back on this, you can. You can push back here while I'm talking, or you can send me a message on Instagram. I'm there. If you want to push back on this talk, great. If you have thoughts on how we could better do this, that's why we're a community. This is not the Church of Jay. We're an online community, and we can have conversations. So thank you for that. Hey, if you like what you're seeing, you like this work, you're excited about it, please consider sharing this stuff with your friends and liking the talks, you know, giving them the thumbs up and subscribing to our channel, because that really helps our YouTube exposure and all that stuff, I guess. And then putting on the warning, Jay's going to be on, the notifications. Also, financially, I want to say thank you to everybody. My last talk did not get posted yet. It'll be posted probably the same time this one is, and that is still a Galatians talk. I think it's going to be part 7, and I'm really excited about that conversation. I think it's really great. I think it lines up with this one really well. So that's here now on YouTube. You can watch that anytime you want. That shall be up the same. So we'll have 2 talks coming out at the same time, this one and that one. So check that out. If you want to help support us, we really could use your help financially. You can go to revolutionchurch.com, and we have Venmo and we have PayPal. You guys have helped us meet. Well, I mean, we are living like this, like, you know, and I've got a lot of people who are telling me to just quit and get a full-time job. I am looking for a part-time job right now. I've worked out some things with my ex-wife where she's made a little bit more time for me. So for me to have work, extra work. And so that's helping, but we're right here. And I would like to just, you know, be right here with Revolution Church and be able to breathe a little bit. So if you can support us financially, that would be great. And if you know, like, groups that might be interested in supporting the work we do and letting them know about what we're doing, that would also be fantastic. So that's revolutionchurch.com. Otherwise, I'll see you online. I'll see you here next week, and we'll get back into Galatians 4. After that, we're going to do some Tillich, and then we're going to do some Dr. King. And I'm thinking about doing a Hume book study, maybe, if people show any interest. So let me know if that's something that might interest you, a John Hume book study. If you don't know who that is, go and Google him. He is quite an amazing human being, and someone who inspires me to do my work. So thank you so much, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To make your 100% tax-deductible donation today, please visit revolutionchurch.com/donate. You can also learn more by clicking the donate section on the website.